meeting will come to order, please. This is the Legislative Study Group on Educator Licensure. Welcome. And first of all, I want to thank our study team members who are here. This is a tough time for all of us to be participating. I know I'm overwhelmed every day, so much to do, so thank you very much for being here. And I know that Representative Dabney and Representative Dunn are on their way. Thank you to nonpartisan staff for all of this work during our time that we have been apart since the last meeting. So thank you very much. We're going to hear from them shortly. And thank you very much for all of you in the audience, our stakeholders, those interested, that you would take this time to come and be with us today and to provide input later when I ask for testimony. So please listen carefully. We have some new items today, and you will want perhaps to give your input. So, welcome, Senator Ricker. We were just about 10 days ago together in New Orleans learning more about data and ESSA. So we have lots of things ahead of us in this next session as we move into that new federal requirement. So we learned a lot about data and transparency, which is the key word, right, Senator? You know, to make us a lot of transparency. So we want to be as transparent as we can be today as well. So we're going to lead off with a presentation of the new joint DFL tiered licensure side by side. And Bjorn or Anna Marie, would you like to present, please? Members, that is available to you. It is labeled Joint House and Senate DFL proposal on tiered licensure framework for our study group today.
Thank you. Chair, the document looks like this for the benefit of members in the audience. Few of you have a legal size document, but this document in many ways is similar to the proposal that has been previously offered by Senate and Bell members. And I'll just draw attention mostly to the key differences. Importantly, this document contemplates how the licensure of CTE educators, which of course is under discussion in a separate group, how that licensure scheme might integrate with the tiered licensure system previously offered by Senate DFL members. And that is largely described in a column marked exceptions. And I don't know if it will be a great benefit to go bullet by bullet through that, but just to offer the general sense that this proposal now does seek to account for the some unique situation of CTE licensures, CTE educators, and makes certain provisions for their teaching classrooms. Secondly, another key difference would be in the column marked minimum requirements before issue. I believe that the previous proposal in the bullet entitled at least one of the following, for example, on the tier one license, a tier one license applicant would have been required to demonstrate at least one of the following, and gives you that list there. And in the previous iteration of this proposal, I believe human relations coursework was listed in that list of optional items. And similarly, in tier two, in the tier two list of optional items too. And it's my understanding that the directed by the chair or other members, claim saying that the proposal doesn't seek to necessarily eliminate that requirement, but envisions that a requirement not dissimilar to human relations training would be either embedded in some sort of continuing education or dealt with process. And
excuse me, Senator Pratt, you have a question?
Thank you. I'm having a hard time catching up. I was looking at this document. Are you looking, this one is it? I'm just confused and lost and not caught up with.
Yeah, Senator Pratt, I was making reference to this document. We have another document that has very recently been distributed called Comparison of Materializing Proposals, but for the purposes of my discussion here, I was looking only at the document that describes what's titled the Joint House and Senate DFL Proposals.
Thank you.
And just a final observation about what the proposal that it doesn't, it's largely silent on whether these provisions would be required in statute or dealt with through an agency rulemaking process. And it's my understanding that that the proposal does anticipate that some more baseline level of qualification might be in statute and finer details to be worked out through the rule. But exactly where on that continuum this proposal lies is left silent.
Thank
and
you,
I'd be glad to answer additional questions
yes.
if there are any.
Thank you, Spencer. I think that right now Mr. Wiggers is handing out a comparison that we have done through house research. So as soon as those copies are distributed,
Representative Lewin, and then Representative Lewin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to either Senator Boston or leader, whoever wants to take this. So I'm just trying to think about concrete examples of what this cut might mean if we were to move forward with this. So, for example, if you were a skilled auto mechanic with the requisite industry certification on that, if this were to be put in place, they could teach perhaps a mechanical class, auto repair or something in a high school for 5 years, but at the end of that 5 years, they would have to have obtained a bachelor's degree from college in order to continue. Is that basically what this is saying? Senator Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. They could use the portfolio method as well. I think provide a portfolio of responsibility.
Is this a follow-up? Because I have Representative Russo on the list.
No, go ahead.
Representative Russo. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Davis.
Well, I guess I have this question. I want to look at in 5 years, if we have an individual that's in the automotive industry, works for the local new car dealership in some of the little schools, at least going to teach a class of automotives. I don't understand why we want to limit his ability to teach for 5 years, especially if he's doing a good job. I don't think that he's doing a good job. I don't see him use a bachelor's degree. You can communicate with students if you're learning something. I just don't know why we're putting up that rule.
Any response to that? I think that's a good question for us to consider.
Chair, I'll just reiterate. Senator Gaines, I believe, has been seeking improvement.
Madam Chair and Senator Meeker, I understand this kid's from the group, I understand that, but I also understand that we have a need to see the workforce out in Mississippi, and so that's why we're in
Dryad.
Thank you. And would this include the ag educators that we've been talking about? I know Senator Bates has been working on them. They fall under this CTE classification, so I've got a professional farmer that wants to teach ag and maybe doesn't want or need to get licensed via portfolio for a full-time position that he's doing, he or she is doing maybe a couple hours a year when their fields are going.
Senator Carson, your response to that? Rhetorical question. Thank you. That's a good question.
Well, Madam Chair, I think that's a good recommendation. It would be the intent of the veteran. Thank you. Well, then, I'm glad we've had this discussion. You can take back feedback from this committee to that working group and hopefully come up with something that works.
Well, in all the years that I've been teaching, we looked at community expert as kind of an emergency type of way to fill a vacancy. You know, when we think about teacher training that we've been having discussions about for quite a while, we talk about teacher quality, there are so many more things that go into teaching than just an expertise in the content area. So while I appreciate the willingness to want to fill a shortage, there's just so much goes into in terms of what a teacher looks like, types of courses they take, pedagogy, content and evaluation, and differentiation, and on I go. We do want quality people. We see a 5-year community expert, again, as Senator Clausen mentioned, that person looks like there are ways beyond the 5 years to make a stay in the profession. We shouldn't look at community expert as the first choice. It should be well down the list in terms of who we're hiring.
So, Senator Dahl, is the renewability then outside the scope of your CTE exception? Because that's a renewability once, total of 2 years. So,
yes.
Senator Pat.
Thank you. Well, Madam Chair, I actually agree with Senator Dahl that, you know, if we can get a professional educator in that role, I think that's the preferable choice. We just know, and what we've heard over and over the last two legislative sessions, is that we have a shortage in Greater Minnesota, particularly for these issues, and that our teacher training programs, our curricular programs at post-secondary level, don't have enough candidates to fill these roles. And so I agree with Senator DeVault, these should be not permanent solutions, but stopgap solutions. The problem is I don't know if we're going to have a permanent solution in place in time to meet this timeline. And I feel like we'll put our students at harm and a disadvantage if we go this strict route.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you misunderstood that. When you look at tier one, it could be up to 5 years. And then if you look at the tier two, that's where you look at the portfolio. And so that allows you 3 more years, so now you're up to 8 years. And then you get to tier three, you can see that CPE upgrade must not be here at this point. I don't want to mislead that portfolio would substitute for the community.
I think we'll just have to spend some more time understanding this.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if the two remaining here, but every teacher is the sole person in charge of that whole group of students that's in there all the time. So even if it's only for 1 hour a day, they have complete responsibility for those kids that are in their care at that time. And part of our teacher licensure system goes around the content area. It has to do, we've put in place continuing education for helping to initiate care for kids that have mental health conditions developing. We have all kinds of student data confidentiality things you need to be aware of, all of those things. And so teacher training goes way beyond content theory. In fact, people start teacher training from content theory. That the content area is only the platform that you begin with, and then you put all of the rest of this on top of that. And so even though someone might only be teaching one class, they're still wholly responsible for those kids in their care at the time. And we've got these many, many years' worth of possible renewals. Some of them's truly committed to teaching the kids on time. We do need to throw a flag up and say it's our responsibility to make sure those training opportunities happen. We, as a state, need to make sure that those things are in place for what we need for the students. But if we continue to provide ourselves with excuses for not having that, doesn't help us provide. We don't need to have a training plan because we put all these exceptions in place, then we're not going to force ourselves to make those training things happen.
Senator Pratt and members, I think when Cynthia was your 9-10, probably going to hear examples of what happens in the classrooms, whether metro, urban, or rural, and that will help us determine what will be the best in the policy sessions. Thank you for your input. That was great. Other concerns or questions before we move on? Then, Mr. Strom, would you address on behalf of health research the comparison?
Madam Chair, I'd be glad to. Members, first let me apologize for the copying error. I copied every other page on the original comparison document, and the right version should be in front of you at the table now, and for the audience, there should be sufficient copies with every page instead of every other page copied now at the back, at the table in the back. I was asked to assemble and compare the three teacher licensure proposals that were presented at the September 20th, 2016 meeting. And the idea was to try and simplify a format so you could look across a sheet of paper and see what each of those three plans were. We worked a bit on formatting and subject with my setting counterparts, and the result is the table you have in front of you. But then this morning, I was provided with a copy of the Joint House and Senate modifications, and so I tried to include those on the chart in place of the former Senate proposal. I worry that I may have overlooked a nuance or two in doing that. So for the complete version of the Senate, please refer to what's on the sheet we were just discussing, but hopefully I got most of the changes incorporated in this document. So if you turn to the first page of comparison, on the left side, I've tried to group by major category, things like the length of the license, whether education was required or not, and then a list of requirements. Trying to constrain it all to one page means some things have been shortened and occasionally a little bit of goofy formatting. And then as you go across in the columns, the idea was to give you the each of the three proposals. I've substituted this morning the middle column with the Senate's new proposal, but as I said, I may have missed a thing or two as I was putting that on this chart. So the first set of categories is the House GOP proposal that was talked about on the 20th. That's unchanged from how that is. There's a pair of columns. The first shows the characteristics, and as Mr. Arnes addressed a few minutes ago, the second set of columns is where that would be determined. I think that's an issue that probably hasn't been talked about too much by this group, whether it would be directly in statute or through rule or just how those requirements would be determined. The middle set of columns, as I just mentioned, is the new House and Senate DFL joint proposal that's in front of you. And then the right two columns on the page are from the proposal that the Senate GOP brought to us at the September 20th meeting. So for each of those classes of licensure, there's a page per class. And also there were some decisions in trying to line these up, whether the House temporary is the same as the Senate, either the expert or not. Some of those are decisions in terms of loading things up where maybe those really aren't the tiers people want lined up with each other. So I apologize in advance if any of those aren't quite where folks feel they line up. So as I said, as you work across the page, it's the House proposal, the new joint Senate House DFL proposal, and then the Senate GOP proposal in each of those two sets of columns.
Thank you very much.
A
discussion one.
Thank you. Something that appears in a couple of different columns. I'm looking at the both the tier one and the tier two. There's at least 8 credits in the content area. And I brought this up the last time we met. How would you really prefer if that could be 8 credits, 8 operation credits? Because, for instance, in chemistry, that 8 credits gets you just the inorganic, In physics, you don't have any quantum. In math, depending on where you started, you may not have gotten the calculus. In the social studies areas, that would include any introductory courses. So you could have had 2 introductory courses in psychology, history, sociology, economics, whatever. So I qualify as a social studies teacher out of those, that department. And I consider myself qualified to teach social studies. My son would qualify. He got good enough scores on 2 AP tests. But that would qualify as a social studies person. I don't think that that's adequate. So you don't really get into the guts of the fields until you get to upper division credits, and so I think that would be much more appropriate for at least most of the fields I know about. And then it's kind of across the board. And that would truly substitute then for the content area tests. You know, it would be a comparable bar.
So Representative Hoover, so what word are you adding in front of content?
I'm in front of 8 credits, I would say.
Well, upper division?
Let's say at least 8 upper division credits.
Thank you. Senator
because I noticed this is pretty consistent across all three proposals. I'm just trying to figure out how you define upper division.
Thank you. I know how the University of Minnesota defines it. I'm not certain if that would apply, but it's generally the courses that that you qualify to take after you've taken the introductory courses. Sometimes it's basically junior year of college. They're essentially the courses that the major student, people that are majoring or minoring in the field would be taking those courses, rather than just being general introductory courses.
Teacher prep programs out of state and how they might label, so upper division might not work for those. We might need to change that to a major or a minor, as you know, just
thank you, Dr. Chair. No, I don't know. I don't really know about the tiered systems in other states, but so I don't know if there's a comparable reference. I do know that when you look at degree requirements in various colleges, that this is a common requirement. For instance, if it has some kind of requirement about the elective courses in fields, it will commonly say something like upper division or whatever their only definition is, about 3,000 and above, or whatever their numbering system is. Sometimes you're required to take at least one upper division class outside of your field for your liberal arts requirements. In some of the, I think, University of Minnesota, University of Wisconsin-Madison, I think you can.
So we want to make sure that we define that position as well. Thank you. Other discussion? Public comment on this proposal or that of the joint House and Senate DFL. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to make comments, especially in regard to the CTE, if that's been something?
Yes, sir. Are you asking for testimony on tiered?
Yes, on the tiered. I think I'm sensing that you want the study group to really dig in on that. So thank you very much. The House GOP has a governance proposal that we would like to present to you. Representative Dean, would you move the approval of the minutes for September?
Yes, no, that's so moved.
Representative Dean moves approval of the September 29th minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The governance are approved. Welcome, Dr. Dean.
Thank you.
So we're presenting this revision of that which we presented at the September meeting because our partisan staff did not need to discuss some of the differences and similarities between the Senate proposal and the House proposal. So we are laying out some new information or some new parameters based on some input we have received from some of you in the audience. And so I'd like to call your attention to Board of School Administrators. And I'll wait for you to get your hand to the proposal.
Wait, Casey. Yeah.
you have the copy of what you're doing. So as the audience is receiving their copies, I will just review for you some changes we made on the Board of School Administrators based on input we received. So we would maintain under the MOU licensing as the single entity, a BOSA as defined in structure presence. Then we would put in statute a schedule for review in 3 years. While BOSA is still operational, we would require them to enter into a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Education to handle the process of applications. No different from what they do now, except there would be a memorandum of understanding that would be in place. Comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, and as you're seeing this and looking at these changes. Again, I just wanted to review my support for suggestion that we go back to considering placing licensing responsibility at the Department of Education. You know, I think, and perhaps the testimony presented, I know letters and that were sent from various stakeholders about this. Some of these revisions to our original proposal have to address some concerns or questions that were raised about how it operates. But I feel strongly that we need an entity to take responsibility for the licensure process. And the reason we're all here is because the process has not been working. And I remain concerned that appointed body, a professional licensing board or whatever, however we want to call it, that some of the other proposals have put forward would not, again, maintain or possess the degree of responsibility that falls upon an actual agency of the government, and one that is responsible for many things with regards to education and how our schools function and that. I do think a bright light would be brought to this issue. You know, the Board of Teaching has been sued in that by candidates seeking licensure, something that we've all paid attention to, but I believe strongly this whole issue would be getting a lot more attention if the Commissioner of Education were being sued under what's been happening currently, under the current situation. So I'm just gonna again reiterate strongly my feeling that we need a very visible presence to take responsibility for this process. We need to discuss more, certainly, if there's discrepancies or conflicts within the law and that is certainly within the legislature's purview and responsibility to try to address. And I would hope that we have a little more discussion about that before this task force or working group. But again, I must just express my strong belief that this is a better direction for this group to be looking at. And I would hope that we'd hear more testimony today from groups that have a little more time to digest the proposals put forward in September and bring forth comments on that.
Thank you, Representative Bloom, Representative Russo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would disagree with much of what Representative Bloom just said. I would like to hear what is different about the profession of teaching versus the profession of nursing, the profession of physician, the profession of accounting and engineering, that means that we cannot have a Board of Teaching that would be accountable for issuing licenses and all the duties associated with it. Professional boards function. What been different in the case of the Board of Teaching, what has been the case, is that first of all, we've put the administration of the policies in a different place, in the Department of Education, and in fact, that's where a lot of the problems have happened, is in the administration of it, and people's ability to navigate the system has been with MDE, not with the Board of Teaching. And then we have not given resources to the Board of Teaching to allow them to do the tasks that were assigned to them by the legislature. And finally, the legislature has been ping-ponging requirements for teacher licensure faster than rulemaking authority and the ability to actually implement these things could take place. So I think that the problems that have existed with the Board of Teaching have been created by setting up this two entities, and by the lack of resources and breathing room provided by us, the legislature, over many years. And so I would really like to see the licensing stick with the Board of Teaching, and if it's not, they have some justification for why this is different than other professions that we license through independent boards, comprised and members of the profession, and other stakeholders that are in a better position to answer questions like, what are these university courses really like now, and what is this profession doing?
Thoughts to that, members?
Well, Madam Chair, I don't know if I have exactly the right page I was looking for, but just, you know, there are a number of professionals licensed by state agencies in Minnesota. So we have a variety of governing structure, if you will, and how we license professionals. Doctors and nurses and that are done by a licensing board. The Department of Commerce licenses insurance agents and real estate brokers. Now, what makes that different? Asbestos contractors, audiologists, which again, testing hearing, speech language pathologists, which I think is people employed by our schools or utilized for children when they be under IEPs and that. And they're licensed outside of professional licensing or by state agencies. So, again, I think you can point to a number of examples where we don't have a clear pathway where we're going to do it one way in Minnesota. And so I just think certainly there's ample room here for discussion and good arguments, I think, can be made on both sides. I'm just staking out my personal feeling and looking at this that not all professionals are licensed one way in Minnesota. We do it a couple of different ways, and there may be a good reason for locating it within a departmental agency here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, when we look at the, by the way, it's on page 91 of the legislative auditor's report. When we compare the list, first of all, the majority are licensed for independent licensing boards. That becomes an even wider majority if we look at the professions that are of the type where there's a recognized degree path to get into that profession. Whereas many of the professions, not all, but many of the ones that are licensed by agencies do not have a recognized education path to reach that point. For instance, asbestos contractors, there's no bachelor's degree in asbestos contracting. There's no bachelor's degree in collection agencies. There's no bachelor's degree in commercial pesticide applicators. Now, there are degrees for audiologists and speech pathologists, but those are the exception on that list. So I think that we need to have a reason for having an exception. And I haven't heard a reason that this is different, that this profession should be treated differently than dentistry or nursing or accountants. What is different about the profession itself? Not about the history of what the legislature has done to the profession. What's different about the profession itself that would make it more suitable to be licensed by an agency than a licensing board.
Representative Lou.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and well, Representative Russo and members, I would say what's different is that we currently have a professional licensing board and it's not working. So to create something that's a slightly different licensing board and hoping for different results, I think maybe a little optimistic. I mean, I would be happy to hear testimony if the department wants to come down and detail for this group that there were failings of the department that caused us to fall apart, or if the Board of Teaching wants to detail why it's the department's fault that this didn't work. And again, I fully understand that there are problems here on both sides that have brought us to this point. But again, I think the inclination to go largely to a structure that is in existence with some changes, I just have real concerns about whether or not that's going to actually result in a resolution to the consistent problems that we've had in getting a workable, coherent licensing process and structure in Minnesota.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And there's a couple of challenges with consolidating all the licensure responsibilities under the department. For one thing, it muddies accountability and transparency, where what teacher candidates are asking for is clear communication and clear accountability for licensure issues for teachers. This would muddy it. Is it a problem I'm having because of the board or the teacher licensure folks? Is it because the deputy commissioner made a decision? Is it because the commissioner made a decision? It would not be clear. And I think we don't want a situation that muddies the transparency and accountability in consolidating under MD to do that. But to the point of, the question of, do we recognize teachers in the state of Minnesota as professionals? Do we respect teachers as professionals? If we do, then we should treat them as we do the other licensed professionals with an independent licensing board. The difference between the ones, generally the ones licensed by state agencies and others, is with the entity or with the individuals licensed by state agencies, that's a regulatory function. It's a strategy towards regulating how insurance adjusters operate, how insurance agents operate, how real estate salespersons operate, and the like. We don't regulate teachers. We have standards for education. We have all sorts of other avenues for dealing with the delivery of education. When it comes to brokers and insurance agents and real estate folks, that's the way we regulate them. And that's the distinction, perhaps, that you're looking for. Why do we treat some people one way and some another? It's because of the difference in our strategies and goals of the state. And I think the fundamental question for this group is, do we respect teachers as a profession? If we do, then they should expect and take responsibility for their profession through an independent entity that consolidates all the licenses. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, do you respect speech language pathologists as a profession? It's not a distinction. You keep coming back to these other places where it's outside of licensing court, but speech language pathologists often work in schools or often have education degrees. Do you respect speech language pathologists as a profession? Do you argue that the state does not respect speech language pathologists as a profession?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Christensen, I'm not clear on all the licensing involved with speech-language pathologists. I assume that these are the folks who are selling hearing aids to the public. And I believe those that work in schools are licensed differently.
I would like to point out that it exhibits 5.2, Minnesota is among 7 states only that has a comprehensive independent standards board. Otherwise, there
there are variations, and most states have those standards. So I don't think we have to worry about profession not being respected or held up. That's an important piece of information. Other comments?
Well, I don't think I can add anything much more than Representative Dabney and DeRusso's added in terms of their comments. I feel strongly that teacher licensure should remain with the Board of Teaching. Representative Bloom, if you look at the OLA findings, it is the fact that we have this muddy water, we have these diffused responsibilities. That's the issue. We can't point to just the Board of Teaching or just MDE. We are here to try to make sense of who's best responsible, who's best has the best experience or the best expertise in terms of having a teacher license. As a teacher, I prefer to be fully certified for the teacher. In addition, the testimony that we took earlier in our this late summer Board of Teaching and MDE said it should be under the Board of Teaching. So even that to me is pretty strong testimony about what direction that we should be working. The OLA said it should be under one entity. I don't believe that mentioned specifically that it should be Board of Teaching, but we need to put it under one roof so we can try to make more sense of the confusing nature of applying for a license in the state.
Members, in our revised proposal that we brought forth today, Board of Teaching is converted to an advisory board, so they're still going to have a great influence. True, we have designated their handle of professional misconduct and discipline matters as a high priority and providing advice to the licensing division on rules, but it still would consist primarily of teachers, 5 to 7 teachers, one of whom would be a public member. That's a very strong statement about our respect for the profession, so I just leave you with that. Are there any other comments? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify? Oh, Senator Meeker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought I'd just add to, we tweaked or revised our proposal after conferring with the House, and BOSA would be separate. And I'd like to suggest that we include BOSA in a joint board, but the majority prevails. And so there would be a separate function for continuation of BOSA. That's going to be addressed in the comments. It would be a great recommendation.
And any reaction to our three bullet points in regard to the Board of School Administrators? You know, 3-year review, memorandum of understanding, so they have 3 years to determine whether or not they stay or go. Is there testimony from the audience? Please come forward. Thank you. Please say your name to the record and begin. Welcome to our
panel. Madam Chair, members, I'm Cindy Crisp with the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. I just have a few comments to make. First of all, when I think about comparisons in Minnesota and other states, I think about and how they handle licensure. I think about how often I've heard individuals around this table and their peers and others in the audience speak with great pride about Minnesota's approach and how we think we've been a high quality leader in this area. So I would be less concerned than some by how whatever comes out of this body compares to what other states are doing. Secondly, it seems to MACDE that we need to take a consistent approach for education professionals, and that's why in the comments that we shared with you, we spoke to consolidating licensure activities under the Board of Teaching and maintaining a separate entity for BOSA. We think teachers, no less than administrators, should continue to be responsible for the oversight of their professions and their programs. Thirdly, I would gently and carefully remind you that the OLA identified as one of the major sources of problems facing the Board of Teaching and Educator Licensing, the extent and nature of the statutory changes made over the years in licensure standards, confusing and contradictory language about who is responsible for licensing. And so I hope you wouldn't forget that as you seek to identify the sources of some of the problems being faced here. I would, related to that, then I'm a little baffled by statements that the Board of Teaching is not working. I think a very small set of cases have achieved outsized attention and discussion. And I think this overlooks the extent of the work that's being completed month by month and year to year by the Board of Teaching and its staff as they continue on a regular schedule to visit, review, and approve all teacher preparation programs. And it's not just kind of check off the list and then approve them all. There are campus visits. There are programs that have improvements needed that are identified and have to be changed in order for programs to continue to be approved. They sort through a tremendous number, especially at this time of year, every month, of requests to approve non-licensed community experts. Representative Erickson has experience doing that. I think the numbers are even greater now, perhaps, than when she was on the board. But I think if some of you and your staff, I know some of your staff have been attending the Board of Teaching meetings regularly, but I fear that you may be overlooking the extent to which they are very effectively carrying out their mission. And finally, I would just like to echo comments by Representative DeRusso, Representative Dabney, and Senator Dahl when they talked about remembering who has been responsible for the problems that have been identified that those have involved in the Board of Teaching. For example, the whole issue of portfolios. My review of the statute seems to make it very clear that educator licensing is responsible for portfolio reviews, but some have held the Board of Teaching responsible for discontinuing those when that was never their responsibility. As well as, and then the final thing, comments that Representative DeRusso made about the extent to which funding and therefore staffing difficulties have limited the ability of the Board of Teaching to meet its mandate.
Thank you, Ms. Christ. Just a question for Ms. Christ, just because one of the points that Representative DeRusso raised, I thought maybe you could offer some insights with regards to the 8 credits as part of a tiered licensure. With your experience and obviously working with and representing the teacher prep programs, would it be easy to come up with a definition of an upper level or upper division coursework if we were to make that kind of a distinction?
Representative Bloom, Madam Chair, I think so. I say that with some hesitation because, you know, we have 31 member institutions. They're public and private, various sizes. So I think there's a very consistent practice. And I would hope that we could help you translate that into a very consistent term or definition because it is a common practice. And I have to applaud Representative DeRusso for that thought. It's not something, some of our members may have thought about that, but it's not something we have discussed. And I think it seems to me that the intent of at least many of your proposals with that 8 credits would be that you'd want somebody to have more than a couple of introductory mathematics courses to be recognized to teach mathematics. So I think it's a great catch on Representative DeRusso's part. And I would be happy to start right away checking with our members to see is upper division a consistently enough used term that if you put that into your document, it would be clear. I think it would also be consistent in other states. But I'll be happy to check that out and get back to you.
Senator Blumer.
Madam Chair and Ms. Chris, thank you. I think any information you could gather for this group on that topic would be very helpful as we continue our work on that tiered licensure.
We'll be happy to do that.
Other questions for Ms. Chris? For Ben Russo?
You know, a simple comment while the next person's getting up.
Okay, it's next year. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to the list of states that have no standards board, of that list, all except the state of Wisconsin has a board of education that's either elected or appointed, and the state of Wisconsin has a chief state schools officer who has a professional standards council advising to
education. Thank you for that. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Kathy Nicoletti with Education Minnesota. I'll be very brief. We believe that educators are professionals who can and should set the standards for their profession. There's no reason to make an exception from these for teachers, and by doing so, you send a message to the public that people who are responsible for the education of our most important assets, our children, are somehow not capable of governing themselves. That devaluing of teachers' competence, their experience, and their professionalism is what is driving so many of them out of the profession. Retention is a far greater culprit in our teacher shortage than recruitment, and any efforts to limit teacher voice and licensure only contribute to the morale problems facing this profession right now.
My name is Sarah Ford, and I'm also with Education Minnesota, and I do a lot of work with our members on education policy. We have, as Kathy said, major concerns about any structure that does not include an independent professional standards board for educators. I just met with a group of our members, 50 members, who are students. They're in their final years of teacher preparation programs. They're either doing their student teaching or preparing for their first semester of student teaching, excited about getting into the profession. And they are, as a whole, frankly horrified that education in Minnesota would be seen as anything less than the profession that it is. And one of the first questions they asked when I outlined some of the proposals that are being put forward is, well, which states do? I want to work in a state that takes this profession seriously. I want to put down roots and raise a family in a state that takes this profession seriously. So what are those states? As we all know, our schools are facing a growing teacher shortage. Licensure is often cited with little, if any, empirical evidence as the reason for these shortages. But the reality is, in Minnesota, we have, right now, there are 68,000 teachers, licensed teachers, teaching in Minnesota. That's how many positions there are. There are an additional 80,000 people with active Minnesota teaching licenses that are not in the field of education at all. More than enough to fill every single position and have over 10,000 left over. And that's a similar number when you compare to the number of licensed teachers in other states based on population. In Montana, there are 30,000 licensed teachers not working in education at all. We have done so much damage to this profession, and we continue to say the problem is licensing and the problem is people getting hung up at the BOT without looking at the evidence that the auditor's report delivered and without looking at the evidence that we have. And so we know that giving teachers a voice has a great deal to do, and frustration about teacher voice has a great deal to do with our retention problem. We know that elimination of an educator-led standards board would send a message to educators that the legislature does not value their profession or experience, and we urge education leaders to preserve an independent licensure board led by professional educators. Thank you.
Well, Education said, I hope you're not mischaracterizing what goes on here. This is a study group. This is not a definitive decision-making group. This is a study group, and we will send a letter of recommendation to the committee. So please, when you're talking to those candidates, do not mischaracterize what we're doing here. We are studying, and we are bringing forth ideas. So please do not put in their minds that we're not going to be honoring the profession. I take offense to that as a former teacher and the co-chair of this committee. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I don't mean to cause any offense, and we do characterize it for them as exactly what it is, as the task force that's looking at proposals to send recommendations to the legislature.
And it's not a task force, it is a study group.
A study group.
So we go back and forth, and we're hearing that today. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our other testifiers. Mr. Cassidy, please.
Well,
welcome to the committee. Please say your name.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the study group, my name is Joshua Grossen, and I'm with Ed Allies, an education advocacy nonprofit that works to improve public education for all kids. Before the question is arise, I'd like to first state that I honor the profession of teaching. I honor the profession of teaching. I also honor the profession of school leaders who have the flexibility in hiring the best people possible to be in front of our kids. I also honor the teachers who want to teach but simply can't. And I honor the parents who want the best teachers in front of their kids as well. I've heard the argument over and over again that we've always done it this way, so let's just continue to do it this way because we've always done it this way. And as I said before, and I'll say it again, this is not an argument to improve our current system. This just keeps us in the status quo of a system that frankly is not working. And that's not my words, those are the OLA's report that said our licensure system is broken and it's not working. So I would like to just throw my support, if it wasn't clear already, behind this proposal. I think that consolidating under the Department of Education first provides a clear line of accountability. An approved body, I would just like to echo what Representative Loons said, was an appointed body would not maintain a sense of accountability. And we need a visible presence to take responsibility around what's going on right now. Since 2011, this body has introduced legislation. We didn't really tinker with that legislation until around 2015, when we said, seriously, guys, Board of Teaching, you have to write rules. It wasn't a huge change. It wasn't a drastic change. It just said, we need to find a clear pathway for out-of-state teachers and alternatively certified teachers to get a license in the state of Minnesota so that the Department of Education can do their job. It hasn't happened. We passed that law in 2010, and we're 10 months in, and we still have not seen rules or regulations from the Board of Teaching. Frankly, they're not doing their job. Secondly, this governance model includes community voice. It includes teachers, community advocates, and parents. An appointed body that we've seen does not inspire diversity. If we only require that teachers are part of this body, 97% of our teachers are white. What voices and faces are not being included at the table? So an agency that is tasked with increasing the diversity of our teachers has to be also diverse. And lastly, the Department of Education has experience implementing and writing rules and regulations in a timely manner. We've seen them do it. They've asked for community input, and they fulfill the law. Again, 10 months out, and we still haven't seen rules or regulations from the Board of Teachers. So with that, I'd like to support this proposal. I'm open for questions.
Are there any questions? Senator Dahl.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Preston, you haven't heard anyone on this working group say that status quo is okay or that we should keep on doing the way we're doing things now.
Mr. Cross.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Dahl. No, I've heard that the study group wants to make a change. I've seen proposals introduced that really make little to no change in how we currently do things. And so I want to just stay away from protecting that status quo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to challenge the idea that there were no changes made to licensure from 2011 to 2015.
Yeah.
I know we made some in the 2013-2014 session when I was on the Education Policy Committee. So it's just simply not true.
Good afternoon. My name is Ryan Stromberg. I represent not only Springlake Park School District in Minnesota School District 16, but also MASPA, the Minnesota School Board, School Personnel Administrators Association. And I think sometime earlier this week, you received a document from NSBA signed off by not only Scott Kinkquist, but also Kurt and also Gary Amoroso. And part of why I'm speaking today is just to recognize, this actually is a proposal that went after not only Donovan's proposal, but also the tiered system proposal. And part of why I decided to speak today is these three individuals not only represent the metro area, school districts, superintendents and other administrators, and also the Minnesota School Boards Association. And I think what we tried to do, or what this proposal tried to do, is bring back logic into the conversation. I think I truly do appreciate, as I've stated before, as I've spoken, I've been in education for 17 years, I've died here by accident. And if we remember where the heart of this conversation started from, is a teacher shortage. And I think for us, this proposal, I think, is trying to keep it simple. We know there can still adjustments can be made. I absolutely agree to the debate that went on earlier with regards to why would we put on caps to renewable opportunities and those kinds of things. I think what happened today in the study group conversation, especially with the tiered conversation, is exactly what's going on from system to system out of 330 school districts. We have rural school districts that have a crazy teacher shortage, from simple classroom, elementary classrooms, to we have metro area school systems that don't have the same shortage, but we no longer have a blanket system, even in Minnesota today. And I really think that this conversation, I would actually thank you, Representative Erickson, for your comments before, is this is progress. And I would like to see a tiered system that allows a teacher in state, out of country, when they come to Minnesota, when they seek Minnesota to teach our children, that they simply know what the process is. The governance under this proposal that you see, really there's options, but more of the idea is clarity. Clarity and purpose. And I'm not going to stand up here and say one versus the other has done a better job. I will say this, is in the state of Minnesota, when someone does get a license, the challenge it has been, unless you've convicted of a felony, it's been pretty hard to actually be removed from to no longer have a teaching license. So I think we also have to consider those types of things as we look at what is either a board of teaching or someone who reviews ethics with our educators. So again, for us, and the last thing I will say is just statistics, and this is from you again, please fact check my facts, but I got in the industry in 1999 from U of M. Approximately 62% of our graduates in the state of Minnesota got jobs the first year out of college. That's why they went to out of state, like Arizona and other places, to seek education. In 2013, and it probably is even different now, but in 2013, 82 to 84% of our first year graduates got a job either in the state of Minnesota or wherever they signed. So our applicant pool, no matter how high the numbers are, our first year graduates are getting jobs pretty much as they wish. And the other fact that is very clear that was stated somewhat earlier is many of them are choosing not to go in education because of what we've done in education. And I think by creating a licensing situation where teachers understand and feel respected in that process is a great opportunity for the state. And I do appreciate the study group and what they continue to do and the conversation you're having. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for our testifier? Thank you, sir, very much. Are there others? Is the Department of Education interested in providing any comments?
So in terms of the governance models, I would reiterate what the department's position has been before. We approve of a lot of what the OLA has put out. We're definitely interested in seeing a consolidation of responsibilities under one entity. One thing I would say that we do see a concern with here in the House proposal that we saw today, as well as the Senate minority proposal from last month, is giving a licensing director, should it be under NPD, semi-autonomous authority and reporting requirements to the legislature. That can add an air of politicization to the licensing process, and I think we would express our reservations about that aspect of it. In terms of the licensure model, we're still looking and fully trying to understand the different aspects of the proposals on the tiered licensure. So we'll continue to look at that. If you have any further comments on that, we'll start again.
Thank you very much. Any questions for our testifier?
Mr. Uni, so if the recommendation from this study group were to locate all the licensing responsibilities within the Department of Education, is that something that the department would be capable of taking on and executing?
Mr. Uni?
I believe that's the decision of the study group and then of the legislature to propose that. That's something that the department could handle. I know there's a interest in looking at a professional standards board. I know that having that teachers have a strong part to play in the licensing process is something that we're interested in looking at. One thing I would like to mention, too, is if there is any movement of responsibilities that the study group and then the legislature is very intentional about the allocation of resources for tools we have, like the SAR reporting system, as well as the teacher supply and demand report. They aren't just used for licensing purposes. I know the SAR reporting system is used to generate funding for QCOM, which is very important that we would obviously say would stay with the Department of Education. With that, I hope I answered the question. Didn't answer any further clarifying questions.
But I guess one other question, since you were mentioning reporting systems and that, could you envision any efficiencies that would be brought to bear by having the licensing responsibilities all of MDE? Speaking as somebody currently with responsibility for education finance, there have been a lot of discussions about needing to build a newer, better IT system and systems for somebody's communicating responsibilities. And I'm assuming that if we had a professional licensing board, that they would need a separate system to be built and paid for, but some of the same information would also be needed by the department for other purposes. So is it possible we need building two systems to maintain two different entities?
Mr. Irwin?
Well, I would, in terms of the expert here, I would refer to Ms. Doan. I would say that a consolidation, you'll see efficiencies in certain places, but in this specific aspect, I haven't taken the time to look at if we would get efficiencies from the items that you bought, but I would defer to Ms. Doan.
Ms. Doan, welcome. Say your name for the record and begin. My name is Erin Dawn. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Teaching. Thank you for the opportunity. I just thought I would lend a hand, perhaps because my daily work is a little bit closer to those IT systems that you're discussing. At this time, most of the IT systems that are in use in educator licensing and to some extent accessible by Board of Teaching staff members are actually online or web-based systems. Those systems are something that are supported by Minute at large. So I don't know that at this point we're talking about any difference in redesigning the system, whether it be on behalf of the department or on behalf of the board. It's the same system that is carrying the educator licensing content at this point that I imagine will be going forward.
So just one quick follow-up, because I know there was some discussion during the legislative session about the need for a better system for the licensure by portfolio process. So is that what exists currently is not a web-based platform or something that is can communicate back and forth between the board and the licensing wing?
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, the licensure via portfolio system at one time was provided through the eFolio tool, which was a free tool for use by educator licensing and all of the candidates who were submitting via that process. At this point in time, that is no longer a free tool. So the option has been reviewed, I believe, by the Director of Educator Licensing and his staff for going back to the eFolio tool, or whether it would make more sense to be redesigning the portfolio process in conjunction with implementing a new licensure system. Ms. Stone, as long as you're at the table, could you comment on the progress of rulemaking that you were requested to complete?
Absolutely. We were at the point of providing both the sonar and the rules that were drafted, which have been available on our website since early drafts since last fall. That material was ready to go to hearing just before the activities of this study group started up in June. And at this point, the very same rules that we have been working on in terms of redesigning licensure or making a clear process are the same rules that we would need to open to implement any tiered licensure structure clarifications. We have been using some of the input from this committee, from our continuous meetings with stakeholders from all parties, from Education Minnesota, the School Board Association, multiple stakeholders across the community to try and influence that process and put out a new draft as we move into this season that reflects the conversations that you've been having here. We do believe that that rulemaking process could be much more, could be expedited by not starting over on a new process for the same rules.
Thank you for that. Are there any comments or questions from members in regard to that? Senator Clausen.
Just a little bit of a related question. Earlier you had talked about I believe the STAR report should remain with the department and also some of those federal reporting requirements. And along with those, it gives the Commissioner of Education some enforcement and compliance responsibilities related to that. Do you see any other enforcement compliance responsibilities the Commissioner has if this was consolidated in a board of teaching rather than with the department?
Mr. Blaine or Ms. Stone?
Madam Chair, Senator Clausen, I have just asked the licensing director for kind of a list of activities and systems that we would want to take a look at in terms of maintaining an MDE. In terms of any further enforcement or compliance activities that we do have to engage in under a different governance model than exists now, I think we would have to go back and take a look at that. But I can certainly talk with our licensing director as well as Assistant Commissioner Nguyen and get back to you and the committee about any further activities that would be required.
I think that would be important, Madam Chair, to please look into that a little bit further.
Is Mr. Onstead in the audience? I don't believe he is. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have a question for each of the testifiers. Mr. Ruby, the question would be, Ms. Crist laid the kind of the dysfunction partly in the legislature, but in large part on your organization, and I'd like your reaction to that. Ms. Stone, I understand that we're dealing in some of the same rules and processes, but yet you were directed by statute to have those rules ready to go prior to the last legislative session, before this this study group was created, and why the delay, and how does that affect the continued delay? And I'll let both testify on this.
First, Mr. Hoodie.
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, thank you for the question. I think as we've said publicly and as we responded in our letter to the OLA report, we agree with the OLA report and recommendations that there has been some confusion and some opportunities for increased transparency and coordination with the activities around licensing. I wouldn't phrase it as fault, I would just phrase it as there's been a mix of licensing responsibilities in statute as well as changing programs that we've had to maneuver. But I would say again that we fully support the OLA recommendations to seek to improve that.
Ms. Stone,
Madam Chair,
a
question addressed to you, Senator Pratt. I'll first follow up to say I think that we get into a really dangerous territory in this conversation when we begin to pit educator licensing and board of teaching against one another. I think that several of you have characterized the relationship between the two as one that was really set up to not be a very strong, stable structure to begin with. We have policy that happens on one side of the aisle, and we have implementation that is supposed to happen with a budget that is outside of the control of the other agency. It really sets up sort of dysfunction from the very beginning, and we've talked about that. I would also just like to point out that educator licensing itself, as the commissioner and as members of the department are looking at educator licensing, when they're looking at all of their priorities across the board, educator licensing is really the only division that doesn't carry out the work of the department. So it would seem sensible to me that you don't continue to fund that at higher levels or consider a new IT system for your division that doesn't actually do the work of the entity involved. So it makes sense to me. Do I think that it's dysfunctional? Absolutely. I think that the Board of Teaching, its members, and members of Educator Licensing were at the table with the legislative auditor saying, we absolutely agree. This needs to change. We need to find better fixes, more efficient ways of doing business. So in terms of, are we doing things the way we've always done them? No. And I would like to remind you that the presentation that I gave when we started these conversations really introduced to you a third entity. We did not say bring everything to the Board of Teaching. We said we think you should scrap, well, and I'll say we think you should scrap all three and move all of this work to one professional educator standards board. That is not business as usual. So I'll leave that there. To your question about the enrollment. So I think we've also established very well at this point that the size of the rulemaking initiative that was given to the Board of Teaching could not have been completed by the date that was set in the legislation. The other piece is there were no additional funds committed to that rulemaking initiative. And probably most importantly, but lastly in this conversation, the statute was changed during the same year in 2015 to streamline the process of licensure for out-of-state candidates far more than any rule change could have done. The rule change that's needed at this point is to make the administrative rules line up with statute. Statutes are always going to carry more weight at this point. The changes or the impact for candidates who are being licensed in other states coming to Minnesota have already happened. Those happened following the 2015 session. So while I know we get very hung up on the statute says this date and it's not done, then where is it? The impact of the statutory change in 2015 has been received. And at this point, we don't want to do further damage to the sort of the mess that we have in statute control right now. We want to work with you to make sure we have a streamlined, a coherent, and a transparent system that's usable by everyone. And we'll continue to do that within the next couple of months. Senator Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So can you give this board an update on where you are with the consent order that you
I guess I'm going to ask for clarification. Consent order is correct.
You were, if I recall, you were directed by the Ramsey County Court to expedite these rules specific to licensure by portfolio. And that's what we're talking about, not the out-of-state piece, but the licensure by portfolio piece, which could have some crossover, and I understand that. But you were also not only directed by statute, but directed by the court to make progress. And if I understand Mr. Cross's testimony, that still hasn't been done.
That's correct. Senator Pratt, we actually did receive word from the Court of Appeals on that issue, that the board cannot be forced to make rules on a particular topic for really anything. You can't be forced to do it, especially to be told what those rules need to say. I want to also bring us back to the 2003 creation of the portfolio and later the 2008 fee that was charged for the portfolio. Both of those things labeled that process as a commissioner's process that was supposed to be an avenue, not for preparation, but an avenue to demonstrate an alternative application as a way to demonstrate that you have met the standards for teacher licensure. And certainly, at the point that that process was discontinued, the board did not ever make a ruling that said that that process would be closed down. The staff position for coordinating that process was eliminated by the Department of Education and not the board. I feel like this gets us back into the same territory of saying, well, it's the board's fault, it's the department's fault. The fault is, we have no resources to conduct a process like that, regardless of who we're pointing the finger at. Yes, we believe it's an important tool too, but we want to see it funded and able to be run in a responsible manner.
I'd like Mr. Reese's comments on that.
Well, I obviously can't speak to the consent decree. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Senator Pratt. In terms of the licensure via portfolio process, I know that our licensing director is looking at new models to get the process up and going. I haven't gotten the most recent updated numbers on how many people are in the process right now. I know we have an open application process, I think a couple months ago. We had our first applicant. I could certainly get the updated numbers for the study group to take a look and give you kind of a timeline of where we've been since we last discussed this in depth during the legislative session. But I'll have to go back to Mr. Onset at the department and get more information.
I just one closing comment, and thank you both. They were tough questions, and I appreciate your candor, but I think it goes to underscore the fact that we do, in fact, need clear accountability in this process, because as what Stone said, if this was a commissioner's order to implement the licensure by portfolio, we need to be holding MDE accountable for this, and we haven't. And I think it continues to be this split responsibility that we have to resolve. And I think one of the things of this study group is who is best equipped to be accountable, not only to the profession, but be accountable to statute as well.
Back in the conversation when we were talking about the IT requirements, I'm thinking one of the things we haven't really always kept clear is the difference between licensing an individual as a qualified teacher, and that's what all of the volunteer licensure is about, versus the process by which a district gets a waiver to have an unlicensed person. And this kind of speaks to this IT question, because those are really two separate functions. They're related to each other because we set some minimum expectations about who a district can employ if they get a waiver from the process. And we're trying to fix it so that we don't have to issue so many waivers from that process. But those are actually separate functions. The information that's needed for the district accountability piece is simply the information of whether or not someone is licensed under the licensing system. So it's not really needed to be at the guts of whatever that database system is, but just the results of it. Yes, this person has this license, or no, they don't. So they're not really as entwined as they might appear. It's just a report, but I think that it's one of the things that we need to kind of make sure we keep separate those functions, that that MDE will continue to have to hold districts accountable for employing licensed people, regardless of where the licensing lives. But that is separable from the licensing operation, just as it is for other professions, where a hospital is responsible for hiring licensed physicians. They're not the ones that do the licensing. Yeah. It's just a piece of information that was transferred.
Other questions or comments for our testifiers? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to come forward at this time to provide comment to us? Corrections, suggestions, recommendations? Study group, any input do you want to provide for us before we talk about our next meeting?
I do have a question with Senator Weaver. When you said that you would create two posts separate now, do you understand, though, that in our recommendation that this entity, if it's MDE licensing as we proposed, will process the applications? Do you understand that? Or is your stipulant? Because we do not have that separate. You know, FOSA is left out of the loop. They still have to issue licenses. So we have a memorandum of understanding that
Madam Chair, they're health permits.
Well, someone has to issue the license, though, so who would do that?
Our proposal had BOSIN with the new merged professional educator. I can't speak fully to the intent of your proposal yet. I just have a bullet point, so whatever you intend is what you intend.
Well, we intend that they have a memorandum of understanding with MGE, and they're the licensing division, to handle the processing of the applications, because now we have BOSA and then we have the licensing division, and they operate cooperatively, but one does one thing and the other does the other. So just so we understand what the intent is.
Yeah, well, you know, Madam Chair, I think, you know, at this point we're at a division, which is fine as
yes,
we explore options or looking at options. One thing we all agree on, we're scrapping the Board of Teaching. And anyone that says we're here to protect that, we will recommend that we have a new entity. And that's certainly the spirit of the recommendations. We just have a different approach on governance, and there's some similarities in the tier, the like tier licensing system. I think we need a little time. Our next meeting's the 16th, I believe, and we'll meet with the CPD group on the 17th, you and I. There's also an election in between. In terms of the governance model, I feel very strongly about the professional educator board. It's very compelling, the testimony that the teachers provide. They want to be treated like professionals with respect. And when the majority of active licensed teachers are not even in the classroom, and then we're told, or the new teachers saying, you know, is this the right signal that not having a licensing board, and with concern, it gets my attention. Suggesting it couldn't possibly work with the MDE proposal, I you know, it could work. But I think this is a better model at this point in behalf of the profession, like a group that we're trying to reach out, we're trying to recruit, and we all acknowledge the shortage. And so I think, you know, several of us are pretty strongly about the independent licensing board as opposed to adding to the bureaucracy. Set the stage for the next meeting as we further reflect on, you know, the options and the testimony. There's a number of to-do items that we agreed to. Good questions at the beginning. We'll follow up on each one.
Any other member comments? So then we will look forward to November 16th. Option for us to recommend to the committees.